Oh, no, 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 no. I can't do this. I'm sorry. This is fine for covering a little bulge, but now I've got holster hips.
People wish to kill you. Anyone who's met you, I imagine. A disguise is necessary to protect us all. And while you are here, you will conduct yourself as a nun. Only I will know who and what you truly are. You will draw no attention to yourself whatsoever.
But look at me. I'm a nun. I'm a penguin.
As from now and until you leave, you are Sister Mary Clarence.
Mary Clarence? Like Clarence Williams III from the Mod Squad?
Mary is in deference to our Holy Mother. Clarence is in honor of St. Clarence of Concordia. There are three vows every nun must accept. The vow of poverty, the vow of obedience, and the vow of chastity.
I'm out of here with that. Oh, man.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Screen Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to not be able to shoot a nun, even though his boss asked him very nicely, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. I shoot nuns on the regular.
Oh.
When I go to the shooting range, I ask them to put up a nun picture on the
get some practice in.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, I got a quick aside. Have you watched Atlanta? I can't remember.
Just the first season.
Okay, minor spoilers for one scene in like season two or three.
Fair enough.
But Lakeith Stanfield's character goes to the shooting range and he brings a picture of a dog. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing? And it's so funny, dude. It's so funny. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the show where every week Perk and I review a movie that was connected to the last one we watched. The last movie we watched, I think it was Terminator 2, but our last episode was our top five movies we watched in 2022 on the podcast. So recommend checking that out if you want to hear kind of our top picks for what we've seen so far of the first 45 movies. But now it's a new year and time to start getting new favorites. So yeah, if you like our show, tell your friends about it. And we post every Friday morning on podcast services. But enough of that. Let's get into this week. We watched Sister Act. Our connection from Terminator 2 was a guy named Adam Greenberg who shot both movies. Very different movies, but both shot pretty well.
I'd say they're exactly the same story.
Yeah, pretty much. Slightly differences here and there. But yeah, Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right. So Sister Act is a 1992 joint directed by Emile Ardolino, starring Whoopi Goldberg, the Dame Maggie Smith, and others like Harvey Keitel. And it is about Whoopi Goldberg, who is a showgirl singer at a casino. Who witnesses some underground mob dealings and goes to the police, and in order to keep her safe, they put her in witness protection by checking her into a convent where she has to pretend to be a nun.
There we go. Did you look at any fun facts this movie?
I did, actually. They're kind of a lot. It's great. When writing the original screenplay, Bette Midler suggested to Paul Rudnick, the writer, that he should actually go to a coven to study. Mm-hmm. And so he went to Regina Laudis Abbey in Bethlehem, Connecticut.
Okay.
And the prioress was Mother Dolores Hart, who still the only known nun to be a voting member of the Academy. It's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yep. apparently as a young woman, she had been an actress, singer, and dancer. Including in a movie with Elvis. So
that's awesome. Well, they named the main character after her then.
Probably. We love that for her. And apparently Whoopi Goldberg hired Carrie Fisher to rewrite her dialogue.
Interesting.
Which Disney did not like. And Fisher told Goldberg, "You're getting into a pissing contest with people who have actual dicks."
She's not wrong.
Nope. And then another little fun story, Kathy Najimy and Wendy McKenna were in their hotel room during shooting, still in their full habits, and they ordered wine and French fries to their room. and Kathy Najimy insisted that Wendy McKenna sit on the couch or on the bed, fully transfixed on the television playing porn, and to see what kind of reaction they could get from the delivery guy. And apparently it was a riot.
That is incredible.
That's just so great.
That's a great quote to end on, because if I can give my thoughts first, Berg.
Yeah, please do. I've not seen this before. One.
You can just tell they had so much fun making this movie. And my God, is it a fun watch. I absolutely love this movie. 10 out of 10, no notes. It's a great time. Whoopi Goldberg absolutely kills it. Maggie Smith absolutely kills it. Did you recognize Lieutenant Souther?
No, should I have?
Yes, you should have, because I saw him. I'm like, I know this dude. What do I know him from? I look back, Radio Raheem.
No way!
Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit older.
Oh my God!
But yeah, I was like, I know that face from somewhere. And then, yeah, it's fucking Radio Raheem.
That's
so that was
awesome.
A nice little
That's
delight
so cool.
to see him. But yeah, it's such a fun movie. Like, the premise is great. Whoopi Goldberg is just killing it in this convent. And then, like, the singing, the actual songs they do are super fun. And, yeah, it's a little bit predictable, but, like, you're just here to have a good time, and it gives you a great time. So I loved this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much nails it on all fronts. I agree with you. I have almost no notes at all. Like, they just kind of nail everything. The odd couple dynamic between Maggie Smith and Whoopi Goldberg is fantastic. Like, The side nuns are really entertaining and fun, and everyone's super easy to root for, and Harvey Keitel is a fine big bad, even if he's barely on screen, which is fine, and the detective, he does a good job too, Radio Raheem. We love that good performance out of him. And yeah, the music and the soundtrack are awesome, and they're great selling points for the film.
Yeah. Yeah, if I give, like, one thing, it's, like, the mob lackeys are really dopey. But, like, this is a family movie, right? You're not going to get, like, serious mob violence.
This is a family movie, which is, exactly the takeaway, right? Like, obviously, you could have made a grittier movie, but it would have been less fun, and then you can't bring the kids along.
Exactly, yeah. But I did like
that. It's a Disney movie, after all.
I did like the, like, how the church evolved and, like, going in the community and actually, like, helping people as opposed to just, like, holding up in there. Like, we get the line from Maggie Smith being like, the walls protect them, I can't protect them out there. And there's, like, a lot in that line that they don't show in this movie for obvious reasons. But you can kind of, infer what that might be alluding to.
Right.
But, like, I loved, how they transformed the church and, like, were helping people. And it's just, man, it's just a great time. I wrote down some notes, some of my favorite just, like, little bits. Like, just the opening of her singing in the casino, and her facial expressions are so funny. She's like, no one gives a shit.
literally on the mic, she's like, you guys don't care. Let's get out of here.
We're not doing this. This is later in the movie, but the part where the nuns are trying to get the helicopter, and the guy's like, it's $1,500, and he's like, we don't have the money. And then they're just, like, manipulating him, being like, oh.
They just straight up start cursing him.
Cursing him. Hope you don't go to hell. That was
dear, like, God, please forgive him, even though he won't help nuns in need.
There was a lot of manipulation in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have Harvey Keitel in the beginning, obviously manipulating Whoopi, but then just, like, when they do their first performance and Maggie Smith is, like, roasting her, and then the head, I don't know what it is, the title as the priest guy comes in. He's like, that was great. Whoopi's like, oh yeah, it was all Maggie Smith's idea. It was, she loves it. So fun to watch, man. What a great time.
I think the casting is perfect.
Yeah.
I think everyone casts is just, like, perfect in their role. And I've now seen Kathy Najimy in two movies.
Oh, really?
She pretty much plays the exact same character. The other being Hocus Pocus.
Oh, of course.
She's one of the witch sisters, and just goofy and lovable.
Yeah.
So she knows what she's doing.
Dude, the scene where they sneak out and go to the bar is so funny.
Yeah, it's good.
They're coming along. I saw you guys were going, so I wanted to go too. Yeah, and even, like, let me get her name here. Wendy McKenna is good too. She's one of the two bigger roles, or nuns, but not a massive role. But, like, the little scene where she, like, gives Whoopi, like, the alarm clock is really sweet. And, I don't know if it was her singing when she was, like, soloing, but, like...
Jacob, I can tell you it was 100% not.
Are you sure? I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, because it was... the dub was terrible, all right? That, I suppose if I have a gripe, it's that the dubbed over Sister Mary Robert...
Yeah, it's pretty jarring.
The dub is terrible, yeah.
But yeah, that song is fun. I was losing it, though, when they switched my guy to my god. Like, because we get that at the beginning, and then I'm like, oh my god, they're doing this shit. Like, she's literally just using this church as, like, a way to perform. But, like, it has positive benefits. Like, it's great. Yeah. Like, this honestly made me want to watch the second one, which I probably will this week. I don't know if it's holds any can of the first one, but...
I actually haven't seen it, so you'll have to let me know.
And they did announce Sister Act 3 coming out sometime soon, which I'm not sure how that's going to go, but...
I'm very interested to see what even they do with the second one, because how do you make another plot? Does she just go to a different convent?
It's a Catholic school. They bring her in as a ringer to help some kids out.
So it's just, like, not even anywhere near the same lane.
It's a Catholic school.
No, but, like, she's in there helping kids out, you know? She's not, like, on the lam hiding from the law.
No. Well, because did you watch the credits of this movie, Perk?
Past the magazine covers?
Well, yeah, the magazine covers and the albums and stuff. Like, there's some really funny shit in there. Like, the album covers in particular, I don't remember what they were called, but it was, like, Whoopi Goldberg in, like, her full, like, lounge, like, outfit, and then all the nuns behind her, like, staring, and, like, only on Sundays. It was fucking great. I absolutely loved it. So I'm assuming in the second movie she's already got some popularity and renown, you know?
Fair. The Rolling Stone cover that they used in the credits was a real Rolling Stone cover.
Oh, really? It was like a parody of it, or was it like actually like printed?
No, it was actually like verbatim the cover.
Hell yeah.
Pretty fun. That's great.
So, when we saw Whoopi Goldberg in Girl Interrupted previously, she was like one of the nurses. But I haven't seen her in a lot of acting roles, and I thought she was like truly fantastic in this, and I maybe want to watch like more movies with her as the lead. Not that I've ever thought she was, like, a bad actor or anything, but, like, she's great.
Yeah, I was, like, really impressed. I can't off the top of my head think of any more that I've seen her in, but I mean, I know I have. So yeah. It's just, like, if you had asked me to tell you a Whoopi Goldberg movie, the list would have ended after Sister Act.
Yeah.
Because that's just the only one that comes to mind. But.
Well, and we're young, too. Like, when I think of Whoopi Goldberg, I think of, like, The View, you know? I don't necessarily think of, like, her acting career, but... whenever she pops up, it's great. So yeah, I don't have too much more to say. I mean, it's just everybody should watch the movie. It's just super fun.
This is a short review because like it's just two thumbs up from both of us.
Yeah,
there's not a lot to critique. It's just like a fun, family friendly movie.
I do have one bone to pick.
Okay.
The Metacritic score is 51.
I feel like that's fair.
It is not fair. These people. What? I would not. Who in the right mind is giving this movie a 5 out of 10?
Well, people have different scales than you, Jacob.
I don't.
Mm-mm. I feel like 5 out of 10 is a bad movie for you.
It is.
5 out of 10 is in theory directly average.
Okay, but let's be honest. A 7 is an average these days.
Yeah, based on how everything's been inflated, I guess.
Yeah,
like, it's just I think if we're strictly going on like no context, just putting it on like a scale, I'm probably giving it like a 6.5 or a 7 out of 10. Because I think it's good, but
yeah,
it's not the best movie I've ever seen.
One thing we talk about on this podcast sometimes is like, did the movie achieve what it was trying to do? And this movie completely, every single thing it was trying to do, it achieved. So I want to give it more points for that. And yeah, it's not going to make think, but it'll make you forget how bad the world is, you know? Make you laugh.
Yeah, definitely. Nah, it's just like, that's always the thing is, because everyone's reviews are subjective, right? I mean, I don't think... IGN has given a video game less than an 8 ever.
I mean, that's not true, but yeah, I know what
you mean.
Literally every game gets a 7 from IGN now, and
yeah.
In order for it to get like a 4 or 5, the game has to be literally broken.
Exactly. So, everyone's personal scale is skewed. I mean, I'm forgive me for my nerddom here. I have an app where I rate beers.
Mm-hmm.
For my own personal reference, so next time I come to that brewery, I know. I feel like my average is like 3.75. out of five, which that's not how that works. Just the yeah. takeaway is that I like beer. Like, the worst beer I have on that list is like a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I got you.
If it were corrected, if it was normalized how it should be, that beer would be a 0. You know, like.
Yeah, I just don't want to imagine people going to IMDb and looking at this movie and seeing a 51 and be like, oh, this must be a bad movie. It's not a bad movie. This is a great movie. And like, yeah, honestly, I feel like I laughed more in this movie than I laugh in like most like Seth Rogen comedies. Like the hits are pretty solid in this movie as far as like the jokes they go for, like pretty much all nail. Whereas I feel like these days more of a scattershot approach.
The drive-by shot at Seth Rogen. Wow.
I'm not a big fan of this. The end, all right, I'm saying it. This is the end. Not that good.
I like it. It's good. But,
I won't say it's not good. It's not my cup of tea.
No, but I know what you're saying. I think with Metacritic, since it's actually an aggregate of scores, right? Yeah. So if someone rates their stuff on a scale of 5 stars and they give it 3 out of 5 stars, that's like pretty good, mm-hmm. but that shows up as a 60%, you know? So
maybe a 7.
Or like
maybe a
70. 2.5, it shows up as a 50.
Yeah.
And no, it doesn't show up as a 7 because Metacritic just projects that out of 5 to a 10-point scale.
Yeah, so 3.5 times 2 is 7.
No, I'm saying like if you give it a 3.
If you give it a 3, that's a 6.
Yeah, it's a 6, but a 3 is a good movie.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
You know, so it you know, everyone's is subjective. I mean, I'm pretty sure Roger Ebert, when he did reviews, it was a star rating out of 4.
Yeah.
So, like, he could like a movie and call it 2 stars out of 4, and that counts as a 50%, you know. Yeah. So aggregations of reviews are kind of valueless. Unfortunately, a lot of people take it as law.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if that movie has under 65 on Rotten Tomatoes, I can't go see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I obviously there's no perfect system.
Right.
I personally use Metacritic as opposed to Rotten Tomatoes mostly because I get mad that people don't understand Rotten Tomatoes. What it actually is, but yeah, that's
well. I just think it's too simplified because they literally boil it down to thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah, is it 65 the cutoff for Rotten Tomatoes?
65 is like the certified cutoff, I think.
Or like if it's a 65 or above, then it gets a thumbs up.
It's and then, 60 and above is fresh, and I think what like 75 and above or something is certified fresh.
I'm not talking about that. I'm not about the percentage. I'm talking like how they calculate the percentage.
Like oh, yeah. I don't.
If
I
it's a 99, know. That might mean that everybody gave it a 7.
A 70? Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Which is just like, anyway. We're getting in the weeds, but the point is go watch Sister Act and Disney Plus. It's a great fucking movie.
Yeah, go watch Sister Act. And don't right. look at review aggregators.
Never look at them ever. No. All right, Berg. We got a task ahead of us here because we had a little winter break and we watched a lot of shit.
It's true.
So we got to get through it, and I'm excited to talk about some stuff. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the common ground, because I know we got one in common.
We got two.
Do we have two in common?
We got Letterkenny, and we got Glass Onion.
Shit, I forgot about Letterkenny.
let's start with Glass Onion.
We just add that to the list.
Add it to the list.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you want to talk about the Hasan Minhaj special. I talked about it, and I watched
it. You've talked about it in the past.
Yeah.
Skip on that.
But you watched it, and you liked it.
It's funny. I like it, yeah.
All right, I'll start with Glass Onion, the new Knives Out movie that is on Netflix. And Netflix bought the rights to Knives Out, but somehow the original is not on Netflix. I don't know how they fucked that up, but
probably some weird Netflix rights things. Netflix bought the rights to the production of the next whatever 5. So
oh, but they don't have the original?
No.
That is wild, but...
They did. I don't know if they
it
had...
It was on
like,
there for a minute, I know, yeah. But
it was on like, there for a while, and I think it dropped off like... recently in anticipation of the new one, which probably means that the production company was like, well, we got to get our clicks out of this. We need to put it on our site, wherever it is. I don't know where it is.
I don't think it's on anything right now. That's the weird thing.
Well, then the production company just wants that rental money, I guess. But
anyway, new one came out. Anyway. I watched it with a couple friends, which was really fun because we were all kind of predicting what was going on throughout the movie.
And you were probably wrong, weren't you?
I got a couple things, but yeah, I don't want to spoil anything for the audience here. Right, but the main thing I did not get.
No, me neither.
But man, I really love this movie. Like, it was such a fun time. I think the structure of it is very different from the original, and it was very like fun and fresh. Cast is all fantastic. Daniel Craig is just a national treasure, even though he's not from the U.S., but I'm going to say it anyway. And also just shout out to Janelle Monáe. My God.
Yes. I'm a big personal fan of Janelle Monáe. Mm-hmm. Because she's awesome and can sing really well and can act really well. And she's very pretty.
Yeah. Yep. But, you know, I love this movie. Highly recommended. I honestly might just watch it again just for the fun of it because I just had a great time.
Yeah, I think this one really kind of, it just capitalizes off a lot of just fun. Like, it paints by numbers with a twist, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My only real gripe was that in the first movie, we get the exposition on what happened via the police interviewing each one of the family members. So mm-hmm. we get to see kind of each of their slanted narratives. And that's how we expose all the character dynamics and mm-hmm. the background. Whereas in this movie, the background and character interactions are just exposed by the third person camera just watches a conversation between each of the characters, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is a far more traditional trope whodunit type stuff. And like, fortunately, because that was my big worry when the movie started out that way, is it's like, oh, it's treading on pretty worn territory here. But it does find a way to subvert, and it's a great subversion, and I didn't mm-hmm. see it coming at all.
Yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I actually disagree, because yes, it is a well-worn trope, but they only show you half the coin, and I think that's where the freshness comes in. I mean, yeah, that's not saying it's never been done, but like,
kind of.
I just really liked how they did it. And I'm trying to say it's not spoiling for the audience if you haven't watched it yet. Highly recommend you go watch it, but like, yeah, you only get, you know, part of the picture.
I feel like you get almost all of the picture of the surrounding cast. And then obviously there's certain big reveals that are hidden. Yeah. So that's my only real gripe, is that I feel like the peripheral characters were, and I'll talk to you later about it, but you're mm-hmm. right. Like they do kind of flip the coin, but more just they extend their logic in a different way. So sure. That was my only real gripe, is that the setup, the first act of the movie is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But like I said, like after it turns that corner, which it turns the corner at like the proverbial, we'll meet at dinner, and mm-hmm. and I think from there on it's pretty fantastic. Yeah. So.
I also want to give a major shout out to Rian Johnson for this one. Because here's the thing, Bert. I've talked a lot of shit about The Last Jedi, and I'll continue to talk a lot of shit about that movie. But this movie really cemented for me, like, okay, Rian Johnson is actually a very, very, very good director. Because, and I was listening to an interview with him talk about this, but like, you can tell every single shot was planned out meticulously to show you certain things and hide certain things, and like items and people. And it's just like, it literally feels like you're doing like a hidden object puzzle, right? Where you're like looking at a box of cereal and like trying to find all the stuff in there, like. Every single shot is so deliberate, and it was really, really fun to experience.
Yeah, I suppose, I don't know. It's, this is a kind of a similar gripe I kind of have with Sherlock, where I'll have to rewatch it before I make any glaring mm-hmm. statement like this, but like, because they do a few shots where you see the shot, and then they revisit that shot later on in the movie, and they expand it, and there's another character there, or there's something else going on. Mm-hmm. They don't really give you a hint that that's happening.
I disagree. I think there's hints all over this movie of what's actually happening. I think there's more hidden there than you think.
But, okay, so, like, I'll talk about it later. Yeah, it gets a little spoiler.
But I do think this movie, it drops a lot of Easter eggs that you don't understand until you've seen the whole movie. And that's why I want to rewatch it and like, oh, there was that and there was that, you know.
But. Yeah, yeah. I'm more just commenting on like it doesn't seem possible to piece it together on your own.
Which, not all of it, but I think a lot of it you could if you were.
But
like,
it means that you can, you know, it gives a lot of rewatchability, so you can go back and look for that stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes sure that like almost no one's going to guess the twist, which is great.
And that's the hard thing, right, with this genre is, like, you want a movie to, like, make the audience feel smart, but also, like, so they figure out some stuff, but not everything, because then you ruin the movie, you know? So it's a really hard, like, tightrope to walk. But I think he mostly nailed it.
Oh, and there's also a trope they use that I... like, okay, I guess. We gotta do this some way, but really? This is the one we're doing? It's at the midpoint. I'll talk later.
Anyway, really fun time. I'm excited for more in this franchise. Like, you can tell Daniel Craig's having a blast, and I'm just excited for him to do more with this character. But
definitely.
All right, let's. Do you want to do? Well, actually, another one that we could talk about, which you already mentioned, was Avatar 2.
Oh yeah.
So you
saw that one?
I did see it. I saw it in the big old IMAX 3D. I will say I was a little bit closer to the screen than I would have liked. I was doing a little bit of the looking up, you know.
Yeah, I was specifically in the back row.
Yeah, but I had a great time watching the movie. It's a really fun time. I've heard people describe it as like an amusement park ride, and I think it's a pretty apt comparison.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
But yeah, I mean, you go for the insane production, and it delivers. Like, my God, like it's hard to even like put into words like how incredible, like, the job that Weta Workshop and James Cameron did for all the CG and stuff. And not even just the CG, but also how the live action and CG components interact is like completely seamless. And as far as like the story goes, like story is like fine. Characters are solid enough with some weird choices there. I agree with you, Perk, but I do want to give a special shout out to the action. I think the action choreography is stellar. I think they designed a lot of cool tech for this movie, and they like used it really fun. Used it in a fun way, and pretty much every action scene, especially the final like climactic scene, which goes on for a very long time, was very well planned out, and like the tension went up and down and up and down, and it just really like grabbed me. So total great time. I don't know if we'll see it again, but definitely worth watching. But Perk, I wanted to tell you, so you had talked to me about how there's some weird frame rate stuff, especially like one scene, and I didn't really notice much, but I was listening to a podcast about it, and apparently there was like variable frame rate all over this movie. Like they were changing the frame rate like constantly for different types of stuff. So I do kind of want to watch it again just for that, because I'm a little surprised I didn't pick up on it. Maybe I was too close to the screen
noticed it. I think it only really stuck out because there are definitely scenes where I could tell it's in like, it's more in 24.
Yeah.
And there are scenes that feel more like 60.
Yeah.
There's only one scene in particular that stuck out like a sore thumb. And it had to do with the loss of an appendage.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm really excited to see like some YouTube videos break all that stuff down, because I'm curious of when they decided to go up to 60. I think it was just between 24 and 60. But it's a really, really cool to watch. You really like feel like you're in the world, right? Which is what James Cameron wants to do. But some of the casting choices were a bit odd. I'll say. Especially shout out Kate Winslet, I think was a very odd choice for the character that she portrays.
I had heard Kate Winslet's name thrown around, and I just had no idea who she was. So I guess it's good that I didn't recognize that it was like, oh, that's Kate Winslet, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard through all that CG.
Yeah, I do want to mention. So I've been thinking about like how I feel about the talks of like cultural appropriation with this movie. Because it very clearly draws from Native American stuff and also like Maori and Pacific Islander culture for like the water tribe. And Kate Winslet plays one of the water tribe members, and it's like, okay, this feels weird to me because you have a white actor playing, yes, an alien, but like an alien that's very much like Maori. Like it's very, very obvious. They even have like the same tattoos as Maori people do, and they do a lot of the same actions, like the tongue sticking out and like for the war stuff. And I'm like, it just feels kind of off. Like I would have preferred a Pacific Islander actor playing that character, because like you can't tell me that James was not very, very inspired by Pacific Islander culture. So to put like Kate Winslet in that, like, she's fine as an actor, but it's just like that, it felt like a very strange choice to me.
I think you're overthinking it.
Fair enough.
And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if someone has a problem with it, they absolutely are within the right to. But I mean, if that's a problem for you, you got a lot more digging to do in this one. Like,
well here's the thing. The like,
first movie is like a tragic amount of white savior.
Oh yeah, you know? But and at least
I mean, Zoe Saldana is not Native American, you know, and so I think that is definitely a valid point, but I think that the whole thing kind of crumbles, and it probably I don't know it very well could have been made with all Native and Pacific Islander actors, and I don't actually think that would influence who went. Because it's not like Sam Worthington's a big name.
Right.
But that's, I don't know, that's just a directorial choice. And yes, they're clearly very inspired. But it is aliens. I don't know. Maybe there's a degree of freedom there.
And it's not the worst thing I've ever seen, right?
I see where you're coming from. I just like, maybe it's because I didn't know Kate Winslet was who she was supposed to be. So I didn't even notice. But yeah, you know, it's a valid critique.
It's similar, I would think, to like Alison Brie playing Diane in BoJack. It's like, yeah, it's not the worst thing in the world. But like, I remember like Raphael Bell Blocksford saying like a few years after the show been out, he's like, yeah, if we were to recast this now, we probably would put an Asian actor in that role. Right. Yeah. And it's kind of like that where it's like, this isn't it's not like Kate Winslet is like putting on, you know, whatever, blackface, whatever, like playing a Pacific Islander. Right. But it's like a couple degrees away from that, and that's where I'm a little bit conflicted. And it's like with Sam Worthington's character, like he is an outsider coming in and learning about the culture.
And saving the people.
And saving the people, which is its own peg worm. Yeah, like,
yeah. Right.
Kate Winslet's character is like a tried and true member of this community from birth, you know, with the tattoos and it's just like, I don't know. It's a little bit, again, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. I don't want to make a whole stink about it, but it's just, I was thinking about that afterwards. I'm like, how do I feel about this whole conversation? And I am happy that we are getting more. I mean, again, it's not exactly representation, but like we're seeing these cultures more.
Discourse around it.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the fact that we're talking about it is valuable at a minimum.
And these cultures are getting more and more in the spot. Like Moana, obviously, is a huge representation of this community. It's just a little bit off. It's like, and again, who knows when Kate Winslet was cast? It could have been like 10 years ago.
Honestly, it might have been.
Yeah. But it was just something I thought about when.
Also, it's one of those, like, directors always cast their homies, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they work together on Titanic. They're probably still tight.
Yeah.
Kate Winslet's like, I'd love to be a part of this. And he's like, well, I got a character for you. You know, it could be as simple as that.
Yeah.
Like how Cillian Murphy is in every Nolan film and then two other Nolan films that don't even exist, you know? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, directors have their people. Sometimes to a fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the last thing I'll say to James, you're listening. Why'd you make Jermaine Clement do an American accent? There was no reason. You could have just made him do his normal New Zealand accent because it was really weird.
Who does he play?
He's the marine biologist.
Oh, that's right.
Why was he doing an American accent? It is.
Yeah, I don't know.
The captain
well,
was
oh,
all. It,
obviously, Jacob. America is the big bad in this movie.
But the captain was Aussie.
America is big bad. It's all the Americans' fault.
Let's talk about I'm sure it won't be a super long conversation. Let's talk about Letterkenny season 11.
Sure. This would be quick. What do you think? I'm a fan. I like it's one of those seasons where the plot doesn't really move forward. It's just kind of like anthologic, and I think it's nice and it's fun and it's a good comfort watch.
No, I agree. Very just fun, chill comedy. There's some great bits in the season. I just looked at the list again as a reminder, but like the first episode, they just debate what flavor of chip is best, and they do it in a very Letterkenny way, and it's very funny. And yeah, it's just another good time. The characters are so good. You get Jive and Pete in more of the spotlight this season. It's kind of the one through line. Yeah, I don't know how if I was to like rank all of the seasons of Letterkenny, I'm not sure how high it would go. It's probably
I'd put it right around the same place where I have the other anthology season, like the one where they, you know, like watch a movie and and everyone falls asleep on the bed.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, the sleepover.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
That season is in a similar frame for me, where it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, not a lot happens. They just kind of hang out in the world, and that works for me.
Yeah, and you have a good time. So, if they, yeah, they've been putting out a season every single December, and I hope it doesn't slow down, because it's just always a nice little surprise every year.
I mean, realistically, it can't be that hard of a production, right? No. They only end up with, like, an hour and a half of actual footage.
Yeah, and they got all their actors locked in, and...
Yeah, that is like a movie every year, but...
Yeah, but they don't have to relearn everything every year, right? Everyone knows this thing, true. And it's really doubting. Here's what I will say, though. More Shoresy, please, man. Because we also rewatched some Shoresy, and my God, that show is so much better than it has any right to be.
Yeah, and it's like, it's a different lane, too. It's not Letterkenny 2.
No, it's not completely its different, thing. But pretty different.
It has a very similar humor style, but it's got way more plot focus and... a whole different set of characters.
More cinematic, too, with how it's shot.
Definitely.
Yeah, great time. Okay, Perk, what do you want to talk about next? I'll throw the ball to you.
Look at my list. I'll just get this package of rewatches out of the way.
All right.
So, I just have Christmas Movies Collective. Because I just rewatched a whole heap of Christmas movies, and most of them still suck.
Oh, okay.
And by still suck, I mean, like, they're good, but I can't watch Home Alone 2 anymore, man.
Yeah.
I've seen Home Alone 2 30,000 times. the only new one of note was Spirited, which we talked about, which I'm a fan.
Pretty
it's
fun,
cute,
yeah.
Cute and harmless. Mm-hmm. I rewatched Moneyball, which doesn't really seem like it would be a good comfort watch, but it's absolutely
though.
A great comfort
it's
watch.
It's so good.
I literally just like opened up Netflix just like wanting to watch something, and it popped up right there. I'm like, yep, we're in.
Hey, watch it, Moneyball.
Apparently it's now off of Netflix as of 1/1. So
oh, that's a bummer.
I got in just at the nick of time.
God, that's a good movie.
And then to complete my, duology, I watched Isle of Dogs again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is such a goddamn charming movie, and I love it, and I love it, and I love it a lot. And it's so fun and simple, just a little boy and a dog, and and there's some doggies, and they're good boys.
Is that streaming?
Disney Plus.
Okay. I really need to watch Fantastic Mr. Fox and Isle of Dogs again, because I've only seen them both once, I believe.
Yeah, I like them both. I don't know which way I'd give the edge. Maybe just because I'm a dog person, I lean towards Isle of Dogs, but...
Sure.
I don't know. Okay. Animation's great on both hands.
Oh, yeah.
All right, that concludes my rewatch mess.
Give me one more. Give me one more.
Okay.
Well, I think you'll still be ahead of me.
While you've got me here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got... only three more.
Oh, yeah, so. I only got two more, so...
Oh, okay, okay. I watched, finally, RRR.
Okay. Now, did you watch it on Netflix?
I watched it on Netflix.
So was it the Hindi dub?
It is the Hindi dub, and I watched it with English subtitles.
Okay.
And I know that it's not the original...
Yeah, unfortunately.
Tagulo or Tagunda? Sorry to the Tollywood. It's not the original language, because the original language rights are owned by some streaming service... native to India, I think.
Okay.
So the only way you can get it here, other than pirating or a VPN to a service, paid service, is Netflix has the Hindi dub, which not enough is lost that it's a problem.
Okay, and I do know a lot of the actors did their own dub, because both languages are spoken in India, so I'm sure that helps a lot.
Like, it's not too jarring. Okay. I'll say that. And also with... the type of movie that it is, I mean, if it were like a one-room character drama,
it would get
on your nerves. But it certainly is not that. Would heavily recommend it.
Yeah, I know.
It's great. It's just like an all-time great bromance film, an all-time great action film. The CGI is fine, but it kind of almost needs to be cartoony.
Yeah.
It's got a fantastic story. They really developed their characters well, the two main characters mainly. Insane, amazing set pieces.
Yeah.
Like, super creative. my new favorite method of attack in movies is man throws cheetah at another man, you know, like just up and picks up a cheetah and tosses him over there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was so much hype around this movie.
Yeah.
That it's one of those where like, surely it's set up to fail, right? Mm-hmm. Like it, everyone says it's great, mm-hmm. right? There's no way it's that good. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is that good. It is a little too long. I don't know if it's too long. It feels long. I don't know if there's much that needed to be cut out. There is a point in the movie where it seems like we're near the climax, and then they go into about a half an hour backstory on one of the characters. And then the plot progresses from there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I was bored. It's just the movie seemed like it was coming to a close, and then a turn.
Sure.
And then more. And it's not filler after that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. still all, you know, movie, and it gets a little slower before the ultimate climax, which mm-hmm. again, terrific. Mm-hmm. But I really can't recommend it enough. It's super available. It's on Netflix. I'm sure there's an English dub. I'm sure it sucks. So just watch the Hindi dub with English subtitles.
Hell yeah. Yeah, no, I really, really need to watch the movie. Like you said, there's so much hype around it. And I've never watched a Bollywood or that type of production before.
It's Tollywood.
It's Tollywood.
Is a distinct difference. And I have not seen a Bollywood movie either. Maybe that's something we look into at some point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But maybe we do like a movie.
That'd be great. Do a 10 string on Bollywood and Tollywood. That'd be... Because the thing I've heard that got me intrigued is like those type of movies are like live action anime. And I'm like how it should be done, not the cringy way it's done all the time.
Sure.
Because it actually has the ridiculous action and like emotions and stuff. So, I need to watch that for sure. All right, I'm going to give you my rock block of four now.
All right.
It's time for the end of the fall season Jacob's anime reviews.
Let's get it.
We got four of them. We got four series I'm going to talk about today. I'll start with the ongoing series. So first one, we had the second half of the first season of Spy Family. It's great. It's wholesome. It's more of the same. If you enjoy the first half of just the dad's a spy, the mom's an assassin, the daughter's a telepath, and just wholesomeness and comedy ensues. Absolute great time. There's a plot line where the dad spy needs to win an underground tennis match to get like the thing he needs, and they just pop off in the animation for the tennis out of nowhere, and it's incredible. If you want like a nice wholesome family comedy with like a nice little like fun twist in there, can't recommend Spy Family enough. Next one is the final season of Mob Psycho 100. I was very, very excited for this because the first two seasons happened a long time ago. We didn't know if we were gonna get third seasons or not. It finally came out and concluded the show. And Perk, I'm gonna tell you what, this is a 10 out of 10 series masterpiece, incredible. All right. No notes. It's relatively short. The entire show is like less than 40 episodes.
Okay.
But it's just an incredible story about a middle school kid who has way too powerful psychic powers. It's by the same guy who did One Punch Man, so imagine One Punch Man but actually with like character development. And the characters are incredible, the animation is incredible. And the way this, it just ends perfectly. This probably is now one of, if not my favorite anime of all time, I think. I absolutely loved it. They nailed the ending for that. Next one, we got the big boy, Chainsaw Man, which everyone was insanely hyped about. The most hyped anime to ever come out. And they nailed it. MAPPA absolutely popped off with the animation. They incorporated 3D and it didn't look like shit. They actually figured out how to make 3D look good in some of the action scenes. I've read the manga, so I knew what was going to happen. And they just absolutely killed it, the adaptation. All the voice acting is great. The thing that I was super excited about with this is that for every single episode perk, they did a unique ending credits like song and animation.
Oh, yep.
So there was 12 episodes and 12 different songs to end each episode. And they kind of served as like a recap of the one that just happened and a preview for the next week's. Okay. And bangers. Like, pretty much all 12 of these songs are on a playlist now that on Spotify, because they're just great. Like, they got some of the best artists in Japan right now to do these. It's a different animation style every time. Like, it's just incredible. Like, an incredible work they put in. So, yeah, I think it lives up to the hype. And if you're down for a little bit of gore and a lot of horniness, but and actually, like, there's actually a solid story underneath there about a dude who's just trying to, like, figure life out, definitely check out Chainsaw Man.
Is that a one and done?
No. So, That hopefully they'll continue, but they only adapted about a third of the first chunk of the story. So hopefully we get at least two more seasons to kind of finish off this first chunk. But, I'm hoping that comes back soon. And then the last one I watched was one I wasn't sure I was going to watch, but I'm glad I did. And it was kind of getting more and more hype as the season went on, called Bocchi the Rock. This is a story about a middle school or high school, I think high school girl who is incredibly socially anxious. And so her plan is that she's going to learn how to get, she's going to get really good at guitar. And then she'll play at the culture festival and everyone will find out she's cool and become her friend.
This is different from Debbie Doesn't Talk.
It is a different but kind of a similar premise. We Can't Communicate, yeah. Where you have a very socially anxious girl.
I was close.
You were definitely close. So her plan half works. She gets really, really good at guitar. Like, she's, like, insanely good. But then she never performs for people, so no one knows she's good, so she still didn't make any friends. So she's kind of, like, she brings her guitar to school, hoping someone will ask her about it, and no one does. she's kind of sulking about it, and then someone does, like, need a guitarist for a thing, and yada yada, she joins a band with other girls from one from her high school and two from a different high school, and then they, you know, become a band and try to figure things out. And the X factor with the show is, like, how they portray her anxiety is really unique in that, like, they go way over the top with it to the point of, like, straight up just changing complete art styles to, like, express how she's feeling. Like, there's literally one point where she's, like, freaking out and she turns into a 3D model and then, like, she's thrown into a simulation of, like, blocks that falls over. Like,
okay.
It's, and I think there's one part where, like, the background becomes, like, live action, if I remember right. Like, they're just going wild with the animation and art, which is, like, super fun. And the way they portray her anxiety is just really funny. But also, like, feels genuine. Like, as someone who experiences anxiety, it's like sometimes, like, shit gets super illogical, but that's, like, how you feel. And they portray that really, really fun. And then the music is, like, super good. Like, the rock music they play is really, really well done. There's a scene where they're playing a concert and, like, they're nervous and they're not playing well. And normally, like, when they do that in a show, like, they still sound okay. But they actually made it sound like they were off sync. Like, one person, like, the drummer was fast and the guitarist was off, and it actually sounded off. So that was really well done. Yeah, another. I'm a big fan of music anime, and this is a great music anime that has a nice little twist in there with the animation. So,
You're reminding me that they do the creative animation to depict, like, anxiety moments.
Yeah. Okay, so it's kind of like BoJack.
The BoJack stupid piece of shit episode.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Right. But it's always different. Like,
yeah. It sounds creative. Like, it's a little step above from, like, a out there perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you like music and you like seeing, like, wholesome stories about people with anxiety, like, make friends and stuff, like, it's great, man. And that's another soundtrack I playing on my Spotify, because the rock music is genuinely really enjoyable. So
nice.
Yeah, that's what I got. I'll probably maybe watch one more anime from this season that I haven't got to yet. Maybe a couple more, but. That's my review of fall 2022 anime. Perk, back to you.
All right. I got two more, and you probably have not heard of either of them.
Okay.
So the first one is called Apollo 10 and a Half.
Okay.
Which is on Netflix, and it is directed by Richard Linklater, like the Boyhood guy.
Oh, and okay.
It is rotoscope animation. Are you familiar with that?
I am.
Tech?
So if it's like for Undone,
viewers
right?
at home, yeah, it's like Undone. And for viewers at home, essentially what happens is they actually shoot the scene, and then frame by frame, they have an animator hand animate over each frame. So it's a super interesting style, and it's incredibly stylized, and it's just basically a way to add a lot more color and character than you would have necessarily. The plot is, it follows a like a 9-year-old boy in 1969 in Houston, who the premise is he gets talked to by some secretive guys. He gets pulled from the kickball court at recess and they say, "Hey, we got a mission. We are doing the Apollo 11 mission, but we accidentally built the capsule just a little too small. So we're going to need a kid to test run it." And so that's the premise, and that they do that introduction for about 10 minutes. And then it just hard cuts to like a full hour of just like what life was like for a kid in Houston in the 60s. Mm. Just like him biking around, going to the pool, you know, going to the ice cream shop where his sister works. And then they do tie back, they bring it back to the moon landing near the end, and it's almost told from his perspective because he does the whole, you know, in his Apollo 10 and a half mission, he does the whole same mission that the Apollo 11 guys did.
Yeah.
But it's obviously it's you know, the fantasy of a child who's like, right, you know, I wish that was me, you know, yeah, what if yeah, I yeah. were? Yeah. So, it plays through and the movie kind of concludes with the, you know, the family in the TV room all watching the moon landing together. And it's, you know, I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. Especially because at first I was a little thrown off by the rotoscope animation.
It is a little jarring, yeah.
I hadn't seen anything like it before, but mm-hmm. I was past it almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And it makes everything pop, you know. Yeah. So I loved it. It was very slice of life. Not really too much of a plot, just kind of like day to day, like today they went to Astro World and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's really just a pleasant look at like what life was like for like a 9-year-old kid in a cookie cutter suburb in Houston in 1969. Mm-hmm. I was recommended this cause I heard it in a YouTube channel I follow brought it up as one of their favorite animated movies of the year. Mm. And I was like, I hadn't even heard of this, but it's, you know, by a big director, and it's, oh, I forgot the best part. It's narrated by Jack Black.
Incredible.
He's like the adult version of the kid.
Oh,
and he's
yeah,
just like,
yeah, that's great.
He's like, yeah, back in that day, you know, we played ball at the fields. Mm-hmm. It's, Jack Black is the perfect choice. It's yeah. Because he's just got such a friendly voice.
It looks great. Like, I was able to look at the trailer, and it's like, is that Glenn Powell and Zachary Levi?
Yes.
Yes, it
yes.
is.
So the only, like, big-time actors in it are the secret mm-hmm. NASA guys who are Glenn Powell and Zach Levi, which was so weird because, you know, with the animation, I was like, is that Zachary Levi? And he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, I think you'd get a kick out of it, especially because
I know great.
You're a fan of animation.
Okay, why is Glenn Powell in every single like pilot movie to ever exist? He's in Top Gun Maverick, Devotion, and now this one that all came out
in
the same year.
Hella typecast. but yeah, it's short. It's super manageable. I just mm-hmm. like threw it on. I was like, what the hell? Give it a watch. And yeah, it's on Netflix. It's super available. I heard nothing about it when it came out. I'm kind of upset about that. Because, yeah, it's been out all year, and literally the first I heard of it was, like, last week. So
yeah, I want to watch this. It looks great.
Yeah, I think give it a watch. I think you'll like it.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, I mean, it's glossy. It's, like, painted as a memory, right?
Right,
so
right.
It doesn't really touch on heavy subjects, right. You know? So, but I think it's okay to watch movies like that.
Definitely.
Know? At some point, I'll watch Till to balance it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I'm more looking forward to that movie. I've heard some of the cast talk about it, so I will at some point check out Till.
My last review for this week is Creed 2. So we watched Creed on the podcast a little bit ago, one of my favorite sports movies, and I gotta give a caveat. I watched it at my parents' house. My dad had taped it on TNT, so I feel like it was probably edited a little bit. I hate watching stuff on TV, but you know how it goes sometimes. But I've never seen it before, and it was solid. I definitely liked it. I liked where they went with the story, and how the kind of the characters kind of progressed. I do think some of the behavior of the characters is a little bit odd. Like, I feel like they're kind of forcing characters to fight with each other just to like have conflict when they wouldn't actually do that. But overall, I think it the best way to describe it, it was like lacking some of the hype from the first Creed and some just kind of the punch, pun intended. Because like the first one is, you know, underdog and, you know, you want to see him succeed and, you know, you don't know if he's going to at the end, but like you're just like excited for him to like be where he's at. So he's kind of already at the top and then he gets knocked down and comes back up and it's just, I don't know. It didn't really work for me as well. Didn't have as much energy, but I still enjoyed it. I'm still excited for Creed 3 with Jonathan Majors, who's just like looks incredible in the trailer. Looks like an absolute tank.
He's a great actor. Jonathan Majors is so good.
Fantastic. So I'm glad I watched it. I don't know if I'll watch it again, but good enough time with it.
Nice. Yeah, I'll have to watch it in lead up to Creed 3 because I'm going to have to see Creed 3 on an IMAX screen. It was shot with IMAX cameras. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are some character like moments that are, I think, worth seeing before the third one. So,
nice. Yeah.
What's the final one, Perk?
Yeah, I got one more. All right, we're in for the long haul. We talked about Sister Act for like 10 minutes, and we're going on an hour. So, you might have heard of this one.
Okay.
I feel like I heard about this one when it came out, and it just kind of slipped my radar for the longest time. After Yang?
Yes, with Steven Yeun?
No.
No, it's Minari. Who's in this one?
That's Minari. Colin Farrell.
Yes, thank you. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
So, I actually, in all fairness, I hopped on because I have Showtime, and I don't use it enough. I hopped on Showtime because I wanted to rewatch Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yep, yep.
And I saw right beneath it After Yang, and I was like, oh, yeah. No, I should watch that instead. I wasn't too sure because, you know, I was in a mindset where I was going to watch everything. And I was like, well, we'll see. It's directed by a director called Koga Noda, I believe, is it? And Luke actually recommended that I watch one of his earlier movies, Columbus, with John Cho.
Okay.
Which I'll probably Love check John out Cho. At some point. I think that's also on Showtime, so I don't really have an excuse not to watch it. And so it stars Colin Farrell and an actress who's slipping my mind.
Jodie Turner-Smith.
Yeah, I had not seen her before, but she's great. And the plot is they live in a future where androids, they call them techno-sapiens, are around. And the family, which is Colin Farrell, Jodie Turner-Smith, and then their adopted Chinese daughter, Mika. And so through a business called Second Siblings, they got Yang, this AI or animatronic sibling, to help tie Mika to her Chinese roots.
Oh, okay.
So he's kind of just a fountain of, you know, Chinese heritage. And,
sure, sure, sure.
And like an older brother for her. And almost immediately in the movie, he goes on the Fritz, which kind of shows some of the cracks in how the family was relying on him and maybe not giving enough time to their daughter and maybe not giving enough time to their marital relationship. And it kind of follows the down the path of how can we fix Yang? What are our options? What do we do now? They at some point get to kind of almost in like a space type celestial projection, get to kind of go through his memories and see small moments. Cause he's set up to be able to record like 3 seconds a day. So they kind of study through to see like which 3 seconds is he choosing to keep. It's like with these small moments. It's such a sweet movie. It's very low sci-fi. So it's, I mean, like, they show a skyline and it's like the skyline of tomorrow, like one of those. But realistically, there's just like these AI robot guys and cloning is a thing, and that's elaborated on a little bit. But the movie's very small. It's short. It's really sweet, really meditative on like family and small moments and treasuring the little things. And yeah, I was blubbering. a little bit. there, it really kind of plucks at the heartstrings in there, yeah, too, because, you know, realizing, you know, the relationship we had with Yang and what's gone and what's left behind, and really, really impressed with a movie that I almost forgot about and saw almost nothing about. And god damn it, Colin Farrell is like sneakily one of my favorite actors.
He's the best, man.
He's
the
so best. Good. I love him. Oh, he's so great. I really hope he gets a nod for Banshees, because he's sneakily becoming one of my favorite actors for sure.
I was worried when you were saying about Yang going on the Fritz. I'm like, is this a horror movie? Because I was
no, he just like like lags out and shuts down.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah, he's kind of a passive character, or like in memories for most of it.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember this coming out, and similarly, like I thought, like, oh, okay, I'm gonna see that, and then forgot about it. There's also another sci-fi movie with Mahershala Ali that came out like around the same time, where it was like a clone situation.
You got me on that one.
I'm gonna look it up before I forget. I want to say it was like an Apple TV thing, but oh, okay. I'm not sure. Also, I realize I don't have to spell Mahershala. Got him.
Okay. I think it's spelled exactly how it sounds.
I'm not good at spelling, Perk. I'll be honest.
Fair
with
enough.
You. Swan Song. Heard okay. Of this one?
No.
Let me just pull it up real fast here. Yeah, at Apple TV. In the near future, a terminally ill man explores a heart-wrenching, emotionally complex situation to save his wife and son from grief by duplicating himself without them knowing. So basically, he's going to die, and so he's like, well, if I don't tell my family I'm going to die, I'll just clone myself, and then the clone will take my place after I die, and then, like, things happen.
Okay.
But I think this came out around the same time. But anyway.
I might have to give that a watch as well.
It looks pretty crazy. Well, not crazy in, like, I mean, chaotic, but like it's a little more sinister, I think.
The cast is stacked too.
Yeah.
But Mahershala, Naomi Harris, Glenn Close, and Awkwafina. That's that's bangers.
That's solid. But yeah. Sounds like A24 did it again with After Yang. Shocker.
Yeah, who would have thought? I hate that this is just my character of just loving A24 films, but in earnest, that I haven't yet found one I don't like, I don't think. Can you think of an A24 movie that I don't like? Keep in mind that I just like Spring Breakers. That I've seen. Yeah, because given there are a bunch that, like, from the earlier A24 days.
There was one that came out last year or maybe 2 years ago called Men that looked not good. Remember this one?
Actually, I heard really good things about that.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. I thought it looked really bad. I also get A24 and Annapurna mixed up sometimes. Annapurna is pretty much only horror, though, right?
I don't know. It's a good question.
They also Annapurna also makes games, which A24 doesn't. Anyway, this whole thing.
That's right. Men came out this year, actually.
Okay. Well, last year now. We're in 2023.
And I did hear really good things about it. It is a horror movie, though.
Right, right.
So I'll probably not.
All right. Well, Perk, we did it.
We've cleared the slate.
You've caught up.
Yep.
Yeah, we did it. Thank you all for listening this long, if you made it to the end. And your award is finding out what you watch next week. We are watching a movie that people have said is very, very good, and some of you said it's your favorite movie of all time, Hook, starring Robin Williams on HBO Max.
I've seen in my extreme youth, so I remember almost nothing about it.
Our connection is Maggie Smith, the goat. I'm excited to see who plays the Dane. Thank you.
Yep.
So yeah, next week we're watching Hook on HBO Max, but until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.